So good to see you. Glad that you're here. And continuing in our series with regard to the home. And as we have tried to build each lesson for the other, we began with the thought of the home being the creation of God. And just as surely as he created the heavens and the earth, certainly he did create the home. And we have followed that theme through then in talking about husbands and wives and parents and mothers and fathers. And this evening we want to keep up the main theme, which is simply preparation for heaven. And as we think of it, preparation for marriage, preparation for heaven. And that really has a vital part of our lives. I realize that that's difficult for many to think of when in seeking a spouse, that might not be the very first thing. And he's not here this evening, but I'm going to call his name anyway, Andrew, and I mentioned something about what would he be looking for in a wife. And the very first thing, he held out his hand, he's going to start ticking off points. And the very first thing he was, she's a Christian. And I was so thankful for that. That's a good beginning point. To think about who it is going to be and what one is going to be. And it is an important factor of our lives. And so as we discuss this lesson this evening, I want, and are going through, there are a lot of different ways to approach this and a lot of different facets, and I'm not going to try to look at this clinically at all. All I want to do is simply get the idea of what God would want us to be, what he would want us to do, and I pray that often, that he will help me to be what he wants me to be and to do what he wants me to do. And certainly that is true with regard to the seeking of a spouse as well. So as we then get into our lesson this evening, what I want to talk about is a very natural thing. Certainly it is natural for our young people to be thinking about marriage or to want to marry. It is simply a natural part of our lives. God set it up that way, created man. And as we see in Genesis 2:18, after creating Adam, which essentially means man, but after creating Adam, he said, it is not good that man should be alone. And then he decided he would do something about that. And we see in several versions, for instance, in the King James Version, he said, I will make and help meet for him. Now, there have been a lot of discussion as to what this word meet, as it is presented here, means, and just exactly what does it mean. And one of the best commentaries that you'll find on the Bible is another translation. And so another translation of this, the New King James Version, when he said, I will make an helper comparable to him. Or in from the new, as we see from, and this would be Young's literal translation, I do make him an helper as his counterpart. Or another, I will make a helper to suit him. That's the James Moffat translation. And another, I will make a helper such as he needs. And this is a Beck translation. Now, all of these, you can see, say essentially the same thing. And yet we can see little flavors in here that help us to have an appreciation for what is meant in the King James Version, that to make him a help meet, one that is suitable, fitting, comparable, his counterpart. All of these things go together to help us to see the kind of thing that God had in mind when he came to the point of creating woman. Thus then, as he did do this, as he made this suitable companion for him, we want to understand that that God made for Adam such as was needed. As Beck says, I will make a helper such as he needs. And certainly God did supply a need when he would say, then, and as he did say, it is not good for man to be alone. and he was thus fulfilling a need. Throughout this series, you've heard me use the word often, the word companion. And this is what God created for him, that he created for him a companion. Now, here's a fellow all by himself, and God gave him what he needed. And what he needed at the moment was one companion. And in this instance, it was a woman. He gave him a woman. He gave him Eve, as we have noted a couple of times before, who became then the mother of all living. But I want to emphasize, and in this day's society, perhaps this is something that needs to be. It bothers me, but it's something that needs to be mentioned. And that is that he did not create another man. And you can look at this in any way you want to. For instance, he didn't create for him a hunting buddy or a fishing buddy, just to keep him company. But he gave him something that he needed, someone that he needed, namely Eve. And thus we can see that God did create Adam and Eve, and as I have said, not Adam and Steve, that here he gave them the suitable companion, gave him what he truly needed. And so as we contemplate this companion, this woman, that she was created by God, and then he, God, brought her to the man Adam, as we thus see in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 22. And here then, we would suggest, is recorded the first marriage. And as I have mentioned before, I think, that it was, while this is the first marriage, it was not a wedding. The wedding is quite something else. The traditional wedding here, I don't know how you do it in Nebraska, but it can't be too far from what we do in Kentucky or what we did when I lived in Indiana or Ohio or in Illinois or Minnesota or Wisconsin. Probably somewhat different than when we lived in Nigeria. The thoughts of a marriage there was what they called then the traditional or tribal marriage. There was the civil marriage, and there was they referred to it as the religious marriage. And those who were well-to-do went through all three of those. The ones who were less well-to-do might just go through a couple of those. But most of the time, there was some kind of religious ceremony attached to it. In other words, they could see that there was some significance to this. Even those who were not Christians still thought of it in somewhat of a religious terminology. Now, what I'm getting at, and all I'm saying here, is that traditions, cultures, and so on may well change from place to place. But the principles that God has set down do not change, regardless of the language spoken or the country it is spoken in. It just simply does not. That here we can find that God is God over all. And thus, as we view this thought and the idea that the wedding then is differing from the marriage, it is the marriage of two lives, the bringing together of two lives in that which we were calling the marriage. And of course, as these laws and principles of God approved marriage are going to be the same regardless of the civilization. Now, seeking a spouse has biblical principle. Now, I haven't made much to do about this word seeking, but I want us to think about that for a moment, that seeking is a good word. That it's a deliberate choice that I have made in using the word seeking. By this, I mean that we ought not to think of it as just something that is accidental. That someone is making a choice in this matter. That he has some rule over this. And as the one woman told me about her daughter and the man that she had married, it was not proper, really, except the mother said, well, she couldn't help it. She fell in love with him. Well, the point is, she could have helped it, and certainly at one time. And indeed, emotions sometimes can run away. Emotions can overpower a person. But there is something that comes before runaway emotions, and you can use good judgment in those times, and one should. After all, if you might think of it For instance, I'm honeymoon, traditionally a week-long honeymoon. And then what after that? 50 years, 55 years, 60 years, whatever. That's an awful long time to outweigh 1 week. There's an awful lot going on after that first week. And that we need to realize that there are great responsibilities within that time, frame. Now, as we consider, as we are considering this idea that of the seeking and that it has the biblical precedent, what I was suggesting then was regard to Abraham, and use that as an illustration, that he sent to Mesopotamia to obtain a wife for Isaac. And he may have done it a little differently, as I said, in the traditions and cultures and all that have a way of affecting the way these things are done, but he had sent his oldest and most trusted servant to get the wife. He himself was a religious man, as he prayed when he first got to the country and was going to to make a choice. And as that came about, then he did make the choice, and she willingly went with him, and ultimately there was a marriage. But the thing that I want to look at here is the fact that, as we see in Genesis chapter 24 and verse 3, that he told him, you will not have a son. And he told the servant, there will not be a wife among the Canaanites. He wanted to be one that would appreciate God, one that did appreciate God, and one that then would not be a hindrance in that regard. And the idea of seeking out and looking for, it has its examples in many times. I've often wondered how, or people often wonder how LaVon and I met. She was born in central Missouri, and I was born in south central Indiana. Okay, how did we meet? Well, it just so happened that my father and a couple of other men decided they would go into business in Minnesota. And we moved to Minnesota. Well, by this time, how did we meet? Well, back to that. Her father had malaria. I'm seeing some blank looks. You don't understand that? Well, you see, he would have gone to Louisiana. But because of the mosquito problem there, and he knew that with malaria that he had, that wasn't going to work. So he went to Wisconsin. And after Wisconsin, he came to Minnesota where we were, and in high school, we met. That is an interesting thing. Here, we think of all those coincidences. Or was it providence? I like to think providence that brought us together, and we came together then at such a time. Now, if I can be a little personal for a moment, she was more observant than I, and so she noticed me before I noticed her. But it didn't take long. And, well, the rest is history. 5 years later, we got married. But the thing is, it was a matter of making a determination, as on her father's part. And actually, he had somewhat of a determination on me before he allowed her to go out on that first date with me. And he made a determination about that and then gave permission. I want to think of another illustration that's rather interesting to me. There was a soldier who was something like 400 miles from home and became a guest in someone's house, and he noticed about the daughters or daughters in that household and began to question about it, and referring the fact that he had brothers back home. And after he'd gone home, he wrote back, actually it was his wife wrote back to the host family and asked if the younger brother could write to this man's oldest daughter. He was 400 miles away. What could it hurt? The next thing I knew, I had a daughter living 400 miles from home. He was a guest in my home, and he would ask about riding my daughter. I didn't think it would hurt. He was all that far away. But he came. That story, actually, to do it fairness, needs a little bit of an expansion. And what I need to do is catch up here, but anyway, it ended up, before he came to see us the first time, he asked if his younger brother could come. And they came, and they saw, and I guess they conquered. But the thing is about it, that after he got permission to bring his brother, a little bit later, before that first visit he came, he asked if his parents could come. And so now then, we got the fellow that wrote to my daughter to start with, and then his younger brother, and their parents. And they came and visited us. And when they walked in and began to look us over, I tell you, the picture came to my mind. It was sides of beef hanging in a meat locker. I just felt like we were really being looked over and examined. And we were. Well, it was turnabout fair play. We examined them too. But as it ended up, our two oldest girls married their two youngest boys. And that was the beginning of our 20 grandchildren. But as we think of this, the whole point of it, and I'm almost sorry that I gave a personal illustration, not quite, just almost, but I did want you to be able to get the idea that these fellows came looking, 400 miles, came looking. Now, that didn't happen overnight. It took a while, but it did end up that relationship then did flourish, and they ultimately got married. When we think then of the thought that certainly marriage is important, and we want to see that, and it's established by God, and certainly we understand that He established this for the continuance of the human race and for its happiness here on earth. God gave us the home for our well-being and happiness as we make that march toward heaven. Now, you've heard me play that same record all week, and I'm not done with it. I'll use it some more. I believe that this is what we're going to have to do, is to think about the fact that the home is a vestibule of heaven. That it is that beginning point. It is the first point. The first step, if you will. It is something that done right will help us go to heaven. And many fail to consider the responsibilities beyond that. One of the best illustrations I can think of that is a young preacher that he was just a fine young man. And this happened to be a Nigerian preacher. And he was several miles from where I lived at the time, but I was there to see him, to work with him for a time. And it was, he was then in a rather small, village, and there were a few young women in that village. And so he informed me that he was about to marry, and I asked him if the woman worshiped in the same congregation where he preached or another nearby. And he said, reluctantly, he told me, well, she's an unbeliever. She is not a Christian. So I had to question him about that, and here's what happened. He was simply blinded by the idea of a wedding, and he wanted to be married. And he thought that he was of age, he thought he was ready, he thought he could support a wife, he was all ready for that, but he had not weighed the responsibilities of marriage beyond the wedding. Now, in this particular small village that I was in, there were quite small houses, and the doors were short. Even I had to duck to get in and out. And so I stood in the middle of his, what he would call the parlor, and I bent over and looked out the door and looked out the way, and I, in what they called the compound or the courtyard of the compound, sat a relatively new motorcycle. Now, I kind of waved my hand like this around, and I said, which of these shops did you get that motorcycle? And he thought that over for a moment, and I guess he was trying to figure out why I asked such a question when it had such an obvious answer. And he said, but sir, there are no shops, that is, motorcycle sales rooms, in this village. It is a very small village. And I said, but there must be, because there, your machine, he would call it, or his motorcycle was in there. It's there. It's very obvious. So where is the shop? And finally he said, the shop is in Benin. Benin was 40-some miles away. Benin. You went to Benin to get a motorcycle? He said, yes. But you say here, there are no Christian women for you to marry, so you'll take what you can get, but you'll go all the way to Benin for a machine. He thought about that for a while and had to think about the fact that he had put more emphasis on a motorcycle than a wife. He put a great deal more thought into it. Well, we had a good week together, and I encouraged him, and when I left, he pledged that he would not marry an unbeliever. And after all, how is this going to affect his work? He's out trying to convert people, and they can say, well, what about this woman of yours? She's not a Christian. What do you care? And he could see that, and he saw the importance of it. And I asked him then the kinds of questions that we're going to be asking here in just a little bit. Certainly, we need to recognize the considerations that are involved in seeking a spouse and what you need to know before the marriage. Let's just start then with this. Marriage is an adult decision. It is truly an adult decision. The divorce rate is highest among teen marriages. Many are blinded by the romance of dating. And dating is an enjoyable time. And as I said before, my children are astounded when I make a statement like this, but I can remember dating days. And they were joyful days. And that Levon and I, and the picnics we had, or whatever that we had, and I was doing even back that early some preaching, and she made then some Sunday trips with me. We'd go out and preach and study with some people and then come back that evening. And it was a marvelous time that we had together. And I was talking with a man one time. He happened to be a coach of high school, sports coach. And he was asking me some of the thoughts I had about marriage and family. And he told me about the first time he kissed the woman that was to be his wife. And you could see the glow in his face that he had pleasant memories of that event. And he said he nearly, when he kissed her and she kissed back, that he nearly went cross-eyed. And he broke out in a sweat and his knees nearly gave way. And then he came to find out that his shoestrings were too tight. Sometimes we let emotion get so hold of us that we don't have good sense about things. We need to think about this. There's nothing wrong with emotion, but you have to control it. Don't let the emotion control you. Make proper judgment. Many, indeed, fail to think about what is ahead and just have a starry-eyed view of the wedding and living happily ever after, and far too many have not thought seriously about this. Speaking of this happily ever after, one time a woman spoke to me and she said, you and Levon are lucky, her word, you and Levon are lucky. You never have any arguments. And I said, oh, lady, you don't know. We've had some doozies. And in case anybody wants to know, yes, it was very nice making up. I'm human. And indeed, we have had differences. But our differences ultimately have three involved. She and me, of course, and God. And we've tried in all of our lives to make God a part of our lives and part of our decisions and part of all that we wanted to do. And we need to think beyond just emotion. Far too many have not considered the spiritual aspect of marriage. And It is said that only 20% of spouses converted after marriage. Now, if you want the source of that, I can't give it to you. I don't know where that came from. And as my son said, 60% of statistics are made up 50% of the time. But anyway, the thought is that you can see that that happens. That does affect lives. It affects lives indeed. Well, we talked about the fact that we need to know some things. One is marriage is an adult decision. And then God set the standard. And marriage is, lessons past, as we talked about the home and husband and wife, we said that certainly it is a divine institution because it was designed and originated and sanctioned by God, as we see in Genesis 2, beginning at verse 18. It's monogamous in form. God made the one woman for Adam. And we can see, too, it's patriarchal in government. And this can be so clear to us, as we see in Ephesians 5, where the husband is to love his wife, she is to love him, and they are to help each other go to heaven. We read such passages as 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 3. I want you to know that the head of every man is Christ, the head of woman is man, and the head of Christ is God. Does this make Christ a second class citizen because he is then God is head? The head of Christ is God. We don't make him second class. We don't rate him for that. And so it should be then for womankind. The woman who is treated with respect by a husband who believes in God is not second class. We know that her soul is just as valuable as any man's, including her husband. And the thing is that God has just simply set an order to things. And so it is that we read such passage as these. We want to understand, too, that as we're looking at the home, then as a divine institution, monogamous in form, patriarchal in government, it is then religious in spirit. And as designed by God, the husband then are to love their wives in the same manner we read in Ephesians 5 that Christ loved the church and sanctified his bride, the church. And husbands and fathers are to be spiritual leaders in their families. We see again in Ephesians 5 and verses 22, several verses following, actually. Also in 2 Timothy 1 and verses 3 through 5. We read these things and we ought to understand the good that comes from God. That he then, who is spirit, has made us dual nature. Body, physical, and spiritual nature. And both have appetites, both are to be fed, and both should follow the design of God. As we read in such passages, Deuteronomy, as we read before, that here the family is to be taught. Mother, father, children, grandchildren are to be taught, as we see in Deuteronomy 4 and again in chapter 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, the Proverbs writer said. And when he's old, he will not depart from it. These are important parts of being in that which is a religious spirit of the home. And then finally, indissoluble in nature. As God decreed what God has put together, let no man separate or put asunder in Matthew 19. And we see in Romans 7 that it is the idea of being put that only death would separate. Now, all of these are serious considerations for one who is seeking a spouse. And so when we ask the question, are you seeking? Are you ready to make an adult decision? That is, are you ready to be committed to what God has decreed? You know, the Gabors, I've forgotten even the name, what is it, Jadon, Eva, and Ava, and all the problems that they had, and one of them said that she said, I really think that a woman ought to just marry and marry and marry until finally she really falls in love. You think she had spirituality in mind at all? Do you think she had heaven in mind at all? Do you think she had the well-being of her husband in mind and all of those things? It was selfishness that drove her. Lust, selfishness, and other terms that may go along with those. But the thing is, they are not alone. Far too many look at it along these lines. They're looking at the idea in a selfish manner. What can she do for me? Or what can he do for me? And so I ask, are you ready to accept the biblical parameters of marriage? That is, and just a quick review, divine institution, monogamous in form, patriarchal in government, religious in spirit, indissoluble in nature. Are you ready to accept all that for a success in marriage, for a home in heaven? Your seeking will lead to logical choices. It will lead then to rational choices. So someone might ask then, well, how can that be? How can you make logical, rational choice in the matter of love? Well, before getting serious about the prospective spouse, you need to ask some questions. I suggest this one to begin with. Will he or she willingly and wholeheartedly live by God's standards of marriage and morality? You read from 1 Corinthians chapter 7, in the first five verses, there talk about the physical aspect of marriage, and that there are responsibilities there for both husband and wife. But in the same chapter, we move to the 16th verse, and how do you know, O wife, whether you will help your husband go to heaven, or whether you will save your husband? How do you know, O wife, whether you will save your husband, or how do you know, O husband, whether you will save your wife? It's an important consideration. Then, then that is the second question then. Will she or he help me go to heaven? Thirdly, then, will he, she help me prepare my children for him? Proverbs 22, train up a child in the way he should go. 2 Timothy 5, we read there with regard to Timothy, how that he then was taught, and the apostle said that he was pleased with him, and how that he was full of faith, which he had received from his mother and his grandmother. And then, I want you to think about this next one very, very carefully. And that is he worth going to hell for? Is she worth going to hell for? Now, gentlemen, you think about this kind of thing, and of course this is addressed particularly to those who are not yet married. But think about it in the fact that she may be the most beautiful woman in the world. She may be one who pleases you to no end. But if she's going to lead you down the path of hell, let her go alone. You don't go with her. But they're the other side of that. No matter how shiny the car he has, or how good a job he has, or whatever the prospects he may have in this life, if he's not going to help you to go to heaven, let him go. And you go to heaven. There's not a man, there's not a woman on the face of this earth worth going to hell for. And you need to keep that in mind when you're looking. And there's nothing wrong with looking. When you're seeking, and I encourage the seeking, that you seek and find the right one. And so we've looked at four important questions. Will the one prospective spouse, willing and wholeheartedly, live by God's standards? Will the prospective spouse help you go to heaven? Will the prospective spouse help prepare your children for heaven? And is a prospective spouse worth going to hell for? Matthew 13, and as we read 41 and 42, Revelation 20, verses 14 and 15, chapter 21, verse 8, talk about the burning fires of hell for the unfaithful. So, The fifth question. Have I answered the first four questions honestly? And that's a challenge. That you think about that ever so seriously. Seeker of a spouse, you need to know the answers to the foregoing questions before you marry. To marry an unbeliever, you find yourself fighting an uneven battle. I thought of a way of illustrating that. I've heard that Nebraska has a pretty good football team, right? Okay. We of UK will challenge them. Only we're going to play basketball. Will that work? Two different kinds of sports, different kinds of rules. And you know that won't work. No way that's going to work. So why should an unbeliever be yoked with a believer and play by different sets of rules? It's not going to work. Now think about that seriously, folks. It is something that we just need to dwell on, we need to work at, we need to think about, and we need to teach our young, we need to teach them early on, and we need to teach them well. And we need to be convinced of the same. On the long walk toward heaven, you're going to need all the help you can get. Now, an unbelieving spouse will make it difficult to stay on that walk. And the task of bringing children into the nurture and admonition of the Lord is far more difficult if one has an unbelieving spouse. Women are being taught that they need not submit to anyone, not to husband, not to God. There are so many, I'm surprised at how many atheistic women there are. And I've heard things like, God is a woman hater. The Apostle Paul was that grouchy old bachelor who hated women. I've heard these things, and you've heard similar, surely. But if we believe the Bible, here our womankind will be treated with respect, with honor, and well-being, and together you make that walk toward heaven. Certainly many, and a good man has been deterred by an unbelieving wife. Many a good man has forfeited any hope of serving as an elder in the Lord's church due to his family. Many a good woman has forfeited hope of her children going to heaven due to her unbelieving husband's influence. Levon will know who I'm talking about, I think. When I mentioned a nurse who was a believer, married a doctor who was an unbeliever. They had two sons, extremely brilliant, and they're just very fine young men in a lot of ways. And today, they are lost because of the influence of the unbelieving husband. When Levon and I were in high school, we learned of a woman, again, who had married an unbeliever. She and her husband had two boys and two girls, and she had made a devil's bargain at the time they married because of the fact that they were two different religions. She agreed that the boys, if there were boys to be born to them, would go with him, and the girls, if there were girls to be born to them, would go with her. At the time I met them, I was in high school, one of the girls had already ceased, and later the other one did. This man was well-to-do, provided virtually anything that she would want materially. And her children are lost. Was it worth it? Was it worth it? Obviously not. I hear various kinds of things thrown at me, and it made me think of the fact that there was a doctor who was asked what percentage of smokers get cancer. And his answer was, lady, if you get it, it's 100%. I hope you understand where I'm going with that. And what percentage of parents lose their children? If it's yours, it's 100%. Now that's sober. That is extremely sober. And so we come back to the question, then whom will you marry? And the one you marry is absolutely and positively predictable. I can tell the unmarried who they're going to marry. I suppose you're interested in that, but I can tell you precisely who it's going to be. And that is the fact that you are going to marry a child of God. Romans 8:16 says we are the children of God. And 1 John 3:1 says we should be called children of God. And so, you'll marry a child of God. Or, you'll marry a child of the devil. Acts 13:10, speaking of Elymas, Paul said, you son of the devil. This is pretty straightforward stuff, isn't it? Let me consider another passage with you, and that one would be in 1 John chapter 3 and verse 10. And there we read, for in this the children of God and the children of the devil are manifest, made known. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor is he who does not love his brother. So, the question comes with no other alternative. Whom will you marry? Now it gets down to two. A child of God or a child of the devil. And so we encourage preparing for marriage. And while you are preparing for marriage, make sure you are preparing for eternity. There's a song we sing that sometimes it's careless soul. And how careless we are at times. But I would like for us to be thinking about these things, and I hope that you were thinking about it very seriously. That as we seek out, that we want to be able to say, this one wants to go to heaven. This one wants me to go to heaven. This one will help me direct my children and guide my children and teach my children, prepare my children for heaven. Our lives here, all that we may do in a lifetime, really go toward the thought of preparing for eternity. May God bless you in that preparation.